Hi, this is Fabi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are
Latinos Who Lunch,
the podcast where we talk about important things like
what privilege?
Have I done that one before?
I don't think so. Hello, hello, hello.
Good show.
How's it going, Babalekis?
It's sunny and beautiful in Las Vegas. I'm having a good time. How are you?
Good. Just here, living my best life.
You look tired, man. What's
going on? Wow, thank you. What a son of a bitch. Cool. What a great start.
What's going on?
Nice to see you too, you piece of shit. You look like trash on fire.
I do look like trash. I haven't fucking slept. I got here to Vegas, by the way. We are in the same room for the first time in what? Like 2 months?
Since March, bitch.
Yeah. No, since April, because we were in Austin. And
I already wiped that out of my memory.
And we're recording here in Las Vegas, and it's 100 degrees outside, and I fucking love it. I saw my family. We had a live taping of Latinos Who Lunch in the Barrick Museum. Thank you to Alicia, Marcus, everybody who made that possible. It was amazing, and I'm just enjoying the day.
Yeah.
What about you?
We are here actually recording at the East Las Vegas Library, the new East Las Vegas Library in my old neighborhood, which is it's just wild to me just that there are facilities here to do podcasts. So we are in there. I think it's called the Whisper Room.
Wow.
It's a completely soundproof room.
¿Cómo se llaman esos videos when people talk really soft?
ASMR.
That's how it feels like, yeah.
And so, they have amazing facilities here. If you're in Las Vegas and you haven't checked it out, please do so. There is a podcasting room also.
Right.
This is kind of like a recording studio in here.
Yeah.
There's instruments and computers and mixers and DJ stuff that I don't understand. There's a whole photo studio.
It's amazing.
It's just awesome to have this available to the kids in this hood is so cool.
Thank you so much to the East Las Vegas Library. This is amazing. I want to talk about what I've been eating here in Las Vegas, which is nothing that I want to eat because I haven't had time. I can't wait to eat. And this is a plug, but I just want to eat In-N-Out, man. I think
you
I
haven't eaten
In-N-Out
yet. You've
no,
been here for 2 days.
I haven't eaten In-N-Out, and that's what I miss. Well, every time I go to Mexico, this is like the first thing that I want to do. Just have In-N-Out.
What do you eat at In-N-Out?
I just have the regular burger.
Yeah,
and I like my fries animal style.
Damn,
and with grilled onions.
Wow. You're such a basic bitch.
And you have an In-N-Out next to you now.
Girl, I have an In-N-Out next door. Oh my gosh. Me and my roommates, when it first opened, we were eating it almost every day. Just because it was literally walking distance from my house. One block.
Yeah, because before we had to go to the strip or something.
Girl, we were so bloated. So much salt. Okay, this is what I get. Are you guys ready for this?
Go for it.
Because I'm a vegetarian, I usually get a grilled cheese sandwich, which you can get. But if you don't subscribe to those notions, what I used to get was a double-double.
Right.
With, not animal style, with grilled onions.
Mm-hmm.
And then chopped chilies.
Oh, my God. I always forget they do that.
Grilled onions, chopped chilies, and then I get my fries well done. So they're crispy. Yeah, bitch, you're over here playing amateur.
I have no idea. I mean, I just like my anyway, keep going.
And then I get animal fries with chopped chilies on
top. She's closing her eyes as she's saying that.
Oh, so bomb, bitch.
And
then I get a lemonade.
What do you eat today?
Nothing. This is, I drank some water. That's
nice.
I had to drop my roommate off at the airport this morning, so I came straight here to record. So I haven't had anything to eat today, and I feel great.
That's good. Yeah. I drink water and a scone.
You know, I usually don't really start eating until noon, which I think is bad for you. But I think it's just because that's just what I'm used to.
I try to get all my sugars in the morning because at night, that's all I want to do, just have like ice cream or something.
Oof.
I know. Tell the story.
No, I'm not. We did it at a live show. Yo, we've been doing so many live shows. So since the last time, since the balloon interview, mm-hmm. was that last week?
Yeah. No, 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that was in March we recorded that.
Right.
We did a live show at UT Austin. Mm-hmm. Shout out to everybody at UT Austin. That was an amazing show. Guess what, Mimi? We didn't record it. You had to be there. And they had a nacho bar. It
was
so
amazing.
Great.
That Velveeta cheese was everything.
Shout out to Jesus and Laura who joined us for that. They're amazing. And I'm going to have them on the show again someday. And then we did a live episode of Latinos Who Lunch Fusebox Festival.
That was amazing. That was an amazing conversation.
About white passing Latinidad, or mm-hmm. like Latinos.
Right.
So it was a panel of all white passing Latinos and Babelito, because you ain't white passing, bitch. Sorry. Maybe. I could see you.
I mean,
maybe like as a background cousin in like my big fat Greek wedding. You don't look Greek, though.
I realized my white passing when I used to work in the store called the museum store. So we sell merchandise from different museums.
Yeah.
And depending on the level of racism of the customers, I was from a different fucking part of the world. They're like, you Italian? You Egyptian? You're this? You're that?
And I can see Egyptian.
Yeah, a lot of people told me like if I was Middle Eastern, and I was like, sure. As long as they fucking bought from me, I didn't care.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Wow. J-Lo's in the house. She's every woman.
Let's shifter.
And then after that, we did a live show here in Las Vegas, right? The Marjorie Barrick Museum of Art is where I have an art show right now with my friend Ramiro Gomez. And you've heard about that show, I think, before on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Sorry for the Mess. It's about like the visibility of Latinos and people of color on the strip.
Right.
And it's also about my childhood and Ramiro's childhood and Guara La Cuchara. Anyway, it's a really fun show.
It's a fucking amazing show.
Yeah. If you haven't seen it, it's like really good, you guys. Like, I'm so amazing. So if you're in Vegas and you haven't seen it, it's open until August 1st or something. Oh, wow. Okay. Wow, don't wink at me. Yeah, the Barrick has been one of our biggest supporters, so I just want to make sure we give them a proper shout out. And also, if you're in town in July in Las Vegas, July 20th,
mm-hmm.
I'm doing a big workshop. We're making there's this part of the exhibition where it's a garden and we made a bunch of plants with the staff. And by we, I mean, I just told them what to do. they're so amazing, guys. And so, you know, my favorite piece in my whole art show.
Which one?
Is a piece that I didn't make. I just directed people what to do. It's my grandma. She has these like planters with fake plants in them mm-hmm. in her front yard.
Yeah.
And so
I
just showed them a picture of what my grandma's planters look like. Uh-huh. And the staff, shout out to Leanne. She was the project manager, Leanne and Paige. And they made these beautiful like bouquets that look almost identical, but have this, you know, they're made out of construction paper and wire. They're just so beautiful. And somebody was trying to buy them, and I'm like, girl, they're not for sale. I'm sorry.
You're going to keep them.
I'm keeping.
Are you giving your grandma some?
Hell no. They're for me.
That's funny.
I think my grandma would be offended because she'd be like, what? My shit's better. My shit's the original.
Like, what is this bullshit?
Yeah. but anyway, July 20th, I'll be there from noon to 5, I think, making plants with people mm-hmm. to add to the exhibition. So if you go to the exhibition, you can make a plant and add it to the installation, which is really cool. Yeah, come through. And then also, if you didn't catch the PBS documentary that I'm on, I think they're going to air it at 5:30 p.m. that night at the museum.
I was in St. Louis, and I just happened to be watching the TV. And I literally turned on the TV, and then that music that you were complaining about came out, a little Spanish guitar, and I was like, wait, this looks familiar. And then...
Yeah, we talked about it at a live show.
Yeah.
And so... I actually haven't watched the PBS special yet.
It's really good.
And I started watching it, and they put Spanish guitar behind me and my family segment. And I was like, bitch, this is exactly what Rosalía wanted. So, you know.
Por lo menos no te pusieron la cucaracha.
Damn, well, they're colonizing everybody. So, every way. I'm like, Spanish guitar, we're fucking from northern Mexico.
Right.
They should have had some banda blasted.
Por lo menos los Tigres del Norte o algo.
No, la banda Limón, algo. But... Can you imagine? So yeah, check it. July 20th, if you're in Vegas, come through. It'll be really fun.
And you also had a show in
Wait, hold on. I'm not done talking about the live show.
Okay, go for it.
Yeah, so then we did a live show with Dr. Erica Abad, which was really fun. And we recorded it. So hopefully we'll get it out. We'll get it out if the audio's good. I know I always say that. And we never air it, but I really, I really want to try to, this was our best live show ever.
It was amazing.
I mean, it was really good. I mean, I think between this one and Doctora Irene Matas, is pretty,
and that was our first,
it's pretty equal.
Yeah.
Oh man, our first and our last. How good is that? So Dr. Erica Abad, she approached me a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. or actually months ago, and like, when are we going to talk about queer Latinx Latinas on TV? Queer Latinx Latinas. Double.
All of the umbrella.
All of the umbrella. Like queer Latinx representation.
Yeah.
And so we did this really fun show about TV show Latinx representation, and we had such a great crowd. It was like over 100 people. Thank you for coming.
And we recorded for a while. For a while, I was like, people are going to start leaving.
Nobody left.
And people will leave and come back. I'm like, oh, you just went to go pee? Great. Let's keep this
going. We should have had an intermission, bitch. We didn't know.
It was really
bitch,
good.
We should have had puestos. We could have made some money.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine?
Una señora elote, tamales,
chicharrones. We fucked up.
Jugando lotería.
Yeah. We're so happy to be able to do these live shows. So for sure, we're going to have an episode next week of that White Passing Latinidad episode. Mm-hmm. I think the episode is just called White Passing. So that should be fun. And then we'll try to air the live show from UNLV.
Yeah, that was fun.
Thank you to Dr. Erica Abad. That was so fun.
And we talked about it in the live show, but I was overwhelmed to see the person that let us borrow the equipment.
Yeah.
Being there. Because I remember talking to him, going to his house, showing me his little studio that he had in his house, and say, just start. Like, don't even think about it. Here, take it. Like, you can have a career out of this. And I was like, we just want a couple of listeners. Like, who cares? 3 years later, we're back, and they were sitting there. I was like, this is like, it was fucking strong. So shout out to Ed and Anna, who have been supporters of Latinos Who Lunch since episode one. And still, if you go to iTunes and look at their reviews, she's the first one who left a review.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's
I
amazing.
Love her.
It's amazing.
Anna and Ed are the best. Okay, so Where have you been since March?
So
since you were in St. Louis?
I went to St. Louis for a little bit. We just went for a weekend. It was Emma's birthday, and it was super interesting that trip because we went to the Arch. I had no idea that big ass arch in St. Louis was a monument for westward expansion.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's like the arch towards the west, and I was like, fuck, this is so fucked up. And it's just the whole entire place is like a museum to celebrate that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just fucking weird. But, I mean, it was cool to be up there. But, like, it was resonating on us that this was just a monument of extermination. Because that's basically what it is.
Damn.
And then after that, we went to Cahokia Mountains. And it's a Native American site. And that was amazing. They had some of the largest pyramides. Mm-hmm. Outside of Mexico. And
whoa.
People don't know about this site. I mean, I didn't grow up here going to school, but like there's so much Native American history in the United States that it's completely erased. So in a way, we washed away all that extermination talk from the St. Louis Museum and the St. Louis Arch Museum. And when we went over there, and it was pretty amazing. But I finished my semester. My semester was amazing. My students in UIC, shout out if you, some of you are listening, they are amazing. I've had students that are switching their majors after taking my class, and that feels amazing. I am directing people doing, they're doing independent studies now. I'm in Chicago for another year officially. I was waiting. I actually just signed my contract a couple of days ago.
Awesome.
And I'm also been working on trying to put together film series throughout Chicago. So we just proposed one for Doc Films in the University of Chicago on Mexican film noir. We wrote this whole entire thing. It was super interesting, not to shade, but full shade. When we went to present our proposal, we saw maybe four POC Doc Film series, and none of them got chosen by those kids. And it's really telling. And there was one of Afro Latinidad film series. That series looked amazing. Y les valió madre. There was another one of African directors. Like, there were just so many different ones that were just not chosen. So we started to hit other venues. So we are working right now with the Newberry Library, which, dude, that place is insane. They actually had, the published letters of Hernán Cortés when he first went back to Spain. And he's like, this is the shed that I saw. And he drew a map of Tenochtitlan. And it's the first European drawn map of Mexico that exists. It's from 1524. Shout out to Ana Lu. I met her because she's going to help me with my research because I'm looking at maps of the 18th century of New Mexico. And we were talking, and I'm like, she had all this, like, Aztec jewelry, right? And I'm like, okay, I see you. I get it. And then she started talking. I'm like, you need to be in a podcast, and you need to be in my podcast. She's like, sure. I said, oh, I have a podcast called Latinos Who Lunch. As soon as I said that, she started sweating. She got so excited. She took selfies. She's like, let me show you at this. And then he just took out all these documents. And it was amazing. She took out a document, a sermon from the 18th century that I've been, no, 17th century, from 1681, that I work on my dissertation. I was blown away that it was right there in front of me when I've been reading a PDF of it for the past 10 years. So that was really good. So she's working.
So what's the document? What is it about?
It is a sermon that it was proclaiming the Cathedral of Mexico City, and it's celebrating, quote-unquote celebrating, the martyrdom of 21 Franciscans that died in the Pueblo Revolution of New Mexico in 1680. So it just says, like, all kinds of fucked up things. So I actually deconstructed a lot of things from that sermon. Mm. But I didn't know it was there. So having it in front of me was fucking, I don't know, it was incredible. Mm-hmm. But she's working on an exhibition. I don't know the details yet. We don't know the details of an exhibition on maps and documents that talk about displacement of Native Americans throughout history. So hopefully, if everything goes the right way, we're going to put together a film series dedicated to that, to talk about the displacement of Native Americans. We're actually watching Westerns, which are so fucked up, and a lot of films that are dedicated to that.
Cool.
So, like, I've been busy working on that. I'm also going to spend 3 weeks in Puebla, like I always do. And then I have a gig. I have a gig coming out. And this is part of Reforma Nacional. And Reforma Nacional, the National Association to Promote Library and Information Services to Latino and the Spanish Speaking, it's almost like a branch of the American Library Association. And when they approached me, they said, we have all these librarians that, in a way, they try to represent us. But again, they're all whiteinos and whiteinas. They're all, like, white librarians, and it's just not doing anything. So they wanted me to talk about colorism. So we're going to spend some time just, like, deconstructing the casta system and all of that. This is going to be on June 20th. I don't have a specific time, but it's going to be on June 20th. On Thursday, June 20th, it's part, again, of Reforma. So if you're in D.C. and if you can attend the conference, the ALA conference, you please make sure to show up, because we're going to talk about this, and then there's going to be a whole panel about why people in their lives and in the history of their families decided not to speak Spanish. Like, why have you, like, remember we talk about La Judy, how La Judy tells us that the mom didn't want to teach her Spanish because it's almost like a form of survival, especially in racist-ass New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to get into a panel about some of those ideas. So that's going to be pretty cool. So between that, teaching summer school in online is just it's a lot of shit going on.
Cool.
And I just moved to, I got out of Pilsen.
You're out of Pilsen?
I'm out of Pilsen.
Wow,
officially.
Those Mexicans were just too much for you.
They
huh?
were too loud.
Fucking racist ass bitch.
Yeah.
That's good. They got the gentrifiers out.
Yeah.
Bye, gentrifier.
Bye bye. No, yeah. Seriously, like, it's expensive. It's fucking expensive, and it sucks because I got to Pilsen when it started to dying because...
It started to dying? What do you mean?
I mean, the winter. So, like...
So dramatic.
Seriously, there's shit going on, but right now that it's the summer, bitch, there's a festival every single fucking weekend. And it's amazing. There's, like, a shitload of... No, not music festival. It's like we went to a festival called Mole de Mayo, and it's just like a lot of fucking mole. It was all right. The mole
wasn't that great.
But it was cool to see the community. And there's just like a lot of cool music. Also, like Los Waltes are performing this weekend as part of like a food truck festival. It's out of this world. But I didn't get to see that because it was just like the whole entire winter that, you know, like when the fucking sun doesn't come out. But we are a mile away, so we can just always bike and go to some of that stuff. So I'm trying to take advantage of the summer in Chicago so I can fall in love with the city because I'm not there yet.
Okay.
But it's all right. It's all right.
Well, that's interesting. That's fun. I mean, it's Chicago's beautiful. I've only been there for one day, so I don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the summer.
Speaking of gentrifiers, Pilsen has been super interesting, but it's getting gentrified violently. It's almost like Austin. Like every day you see the color of the neighborhood changing. And people are resisting, but it's very difficult and it's very complicated. And I've seen how when I first started to look for an apartment when I moved in August, the prices of the apartments have been raised within 6-7 months.
How long have you been in?
I got there in August.
In Chicago.
So August. Almost a year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
Damn, you moved like 3 times already?
Yeah. It's so crazy. And I was holding on to sign my contract for another year because I was waiting for another gig in another university. Pero no pasó nada.
Damn.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, let's take a little break. And then we'll be right back with more bullshit. Today's episode is brought to you by the original Lindo Michoacán on East Desert Inn.
You be sure that I will be there after this taping.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe I haven't been there yet. I've been in Vegas for 3 days now, 4 days, and that's what I need. I need my Fidel fix. I love Lindo Michoacán, and I love all of our listeners who tag us when they go to the original Lindo Michoacán on East Desert Inn. It's so funny.
That's my favorite, to see the stories, and they're like, we got our 25%
off. My favorite was on Twitter, the Killers. They go there all the time. And Brandon Flowers and one of the other white guys, they went to eat there, and they posted on Twitter that they went there and that they love it. And one of our listeners posted, they're like, but did they get the LWL discount?
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Brandon Flowers, man, he can get it. So if you are a Latinos Who Lunch listener and you go to the original Lindo Michoacán, they will give you 25% off of your meal. Isn't that crazy?
Su madre.
25% off if you say you're a Latinos Who Lunch listener. So it's a deal, y'all.
Not only that, make sure to get your menudo. Menudo lo alucino, güey.
My gosh.
Amazing.
Is it only on the weekends? I think so, right? I don't know.
It doesn't matter. Just buy a lot so you last the whole entire week. And with 25% off, what are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly. Lindo Michoacán.
Save water.
Drink margaritas. And we're back.
Let's get into it.
What's up?
I want to hear what's going on. What happened?
What happened with me? Well, I almost died. Yo, I just went too hard, and I've had a lot of realizations, I think, in the last maybe like 3 months. Mm-hmm. I never say no to shit, and I know I'm a broken record. I keep saying the same shit over and over, but I never say no to anything. And so since I got back from Guatemala till April 11th, basically, I had been working really hard to make the show at UNLV, but basically nonstop every day.
That's a feat, man. That show is so much stuff.
Yeah, I wanted to fill the museum with things.
And
I wanted it to be just full of shit.
Yeah.
I wanted it to be in some places like uncomfortably full of sculptures and wall pieces and stuff, you know? And so there was a lot of work in that show. And then immediately after the show at UNLV, sorry for the mess, at the Marjorie Barrick Museum, open through August, if anybody wants to see it. workshop July 20th with artist Justin Favela from 12 to 5. Oh, Lance is going to do a workshop too. He's been on the podcast before.
Yes.
If you want to do a workshop with Lancey, he's awesome. Okay. And so right after that, I went straight to Austin to cover that building in fabric or whatever the fuck I did for the Fusebox Festival. And that was nonstop. And then
you went to Reno, right? And then came back to Austin, something like that?
Oh, my God. I went to Reno. Shout out to Reno, everybody. Oh, my gosh. I went to Reno. Shout out to the Nevada Humanities. Nevada Humanities does a big award show, and I got an award. So I went to receive my award and get drunk with a bunch of white people and then immediately fly back and do the live. I immediately came from the airport and did the live show at UT Austin and then did Fusebox Festival. We did the white passing show the next day. Mm-hmm. So it was just back to back. And then I flew back to Vegas, and me and my friend Francisco Alonso, who has been on the Art People pod before, we did this big installation on a building in Las Vegas, and we had a week to do it, basically.
Oh, fucking crazy.
And so that was the moment, like, my body was at that point, my body was like, no, bitch.
We are done.
But I had to keep going. Yeah. So like I bought a full body like brace, basically, just so my body could like stand up so I could just keep working. And
that's
so
fucking crazy.
I just realized, you know, when I was like climbing a ladder to get on the roof of a giant building, you know, like a 4-story building, not giant.
I saw the video.
But I'm like, yo, is this worth my life? This fucking installation? Like, what they're paying me to do this, you know? Like, in the middle of the night on a rooftop, like in the wind with like rope and. I love the installation. It was amazing. Working with Francisco was a really beautiful experience. And I learned a lot from working with him and about myself also. And I think, just to be honest, like from now on, I'm going to measure my experience collaborating with others on that experience, because he was such a great collaborator that I'm like, it doesn't have to be the way that it's been with me with different collaborators. And it's hard because, you know, as artists, as creative people, I know that I'm a narcissist a lot of the times and like self-centered. But like when I work with people, I really appreciate it when like they have the same kind of drive that I do.
Yeah.
And it's like
some work ethic.
Oh my God. It's amazing. It's amazing when you find that person. I mean, the first day that we went to the studio, he was there before me, which was incredible. And then I walk in and I'm like, I'm just like used to being the project manager for everything, right? And I walk in and he's like, okay, I came up with some plans last night. And he like opened his notes and it was like plan A, B, and C.
You're
and
like,
I just started crying. I was like, what? You have plans?
Wow.
He's like, yeah. I'm like, oh my God. It was just like instant relief. And then we got to work. I mean, it wasn't easy. It was a really difficult experience.
Labor intensive.
But I learned, very labor intensive. At one point, because we were using chicken wire, what dummies. we were using chicken wire to make these big kind of like abstract forms.
Yeah.
That look like fluffy, like Muppet clouds. They look really cool. The colors are really awesome.
Yeah.
I based them on Francisco's paintings, like all the colors that I bought. Mm-hmm. Bought a bunch of fabric and paper and vinyl, like plastic vinyl. And we hung them up to make these migratory forms because Francisco's work is a lot about like imaginary borders or like border, like he cuts up maps and things like that.
Oh, that's cool.
So we used chicken wire as the base because we thought we could make like fun shapes with the chicken wire and then attach the things. But
dude,
our hands were so cut up that our phones didn't recognize our thumbprint.
Because
we had no thumbprints. That's how fucked up our hands were.
Shit.
They're like raw meat. Was awful. And then that building we were working on was all white. And at one point, I'm climbing down the ladder and I look up and there's red handprints on the ladder all the way down.
No.
And then I look at my hands and I'm like bleeding through my gloves. I was like, what the fuck am I doing? So when people say blood, sweat, and tears, bitch, like, that ain't
it.
Literally, literally, I put my blood, sweat, and tears in a shit. Okay, so I did that. I did a live podcast with the Believer Fest with Francisco.
That same week?
And Ramiro. The next day after the installation was complete, girl. And then I had time to rest. And, you know, it's really hard to just stay still here when I'm in Las Vegas because my whole family's here. So I said, if I'm going to get any rest, I got to get out of here. Like, I can't be home.
Yeah,
so I went to New York.
What?
I just flew to New York. So I'm sorry to everybody that I didn't see, but I had an art show, a group show in New York. And I said, you know what? I want to go to the group show. And then I remembered, bitch, that Eva from De Colores Radio, me and her have been wanting to go to the Smithsonian, the African-American History Smithsonian.
In D.C.?
Yeah, because there's an Oprah exhibit. And it's only up through like June something.
Did you get tickets?
Bitch, we went. So I met up with Eva in D.C. before New York. And that was the beginning of like my vacation. And my cousin Gabby came with me
because
she invited herself, honestly. But it was the best idea ever because I love her so much. We're like the best travel buddies. She's the one that I went to Guatemala with.
Right.
And so and it was great. Me, her, and Eva, like best buddies ever. So... We went to the Oprah exhibit, and I got my motherfucking life.
I can't.
I spent hours in there. I have never been so interested in a museum exhibit in my entire life.
Wow.
I read every plaque. I went through. I read every single thing. I watched every video once, twice, three times over.
That must have felt good, because I feel the same way. Like, going to a museum, it's work for me. So when you see an exhibition that actually takes all of your attention...
I loved
it.
They had shit from Oprah's house. Like, Oprah just, like, donated her shit. Like, this is my family photos. Like, just check it out.
Was this Smithsonian,
pieces of her set from her TV show. Like,
that's
yo,
amazing.
Oprah is so inspiring. And I love also that the Smithsonian... It does sugarcoat a lot of shit, obviously, but a few of the curators there know what's up, I can tell. So,
and that museum is incredible,
too. So there was a section about how Oprah caters to white people.
No!
In her own exhibit.
Oh, my God.
It was really good. And also how problematic her show it, like, and how, like, you know, like Dr. Phil, Dr. Oz, like, Ayanla, like these problematic ass people that are on TV, and she still endorses them after all the fucked up shit they've done. You know what I mean?
And they put that there?
They put it there. Yeah. I loved it.
That's beautiful.
I loved it. Even though she gave millions of dollars. They named a theater after her. She donated millions and millions of dollars to
and
that.
She saw that.
She was like, yeah, this is my life, whatever.
It's critical.
Know? But yo, just to see, it was so inspiring to me. To see Oprah. I know, like, okay, Oprah, everybody knows. It's like talking about Beyonce, right? But no, but just what I loved about the show is seeing where she came from. Because, you know, a lot of people see, for example, they see me. And I've heard people talk, you know, like people talk shit. The more successful you are or whatever. And so people will say, like, dude, how do you get those shows? Oh, my God. People just give you shows, you know? There's nothing that makes me... more angry you know, than like, people that think that my life is like, people just give me archos and there's like butterflies and rainbows around me all the time. And I'm just like riding a taco into the fucking sunset. It's like they don't see the part where I'm like, my body broke and like I'm hanging off of the side of a building with bleeding hands.
But also they don't see the fact that you spend years applying to everything, going to everything. Like this shit
spent over 15 years like working for free so that I can be the artist that gets paid kind of fairly now.
Right, kind of. Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah, because, and that's the cool thing. If people have been listening to the podcast from the beginning, they've seen your progress of how getting paid a little bit and feeling like a fucking $1 million and then comparing yourself to others that are getting paid a lot more and you're like, what the fuck is going on? And pushing and pushing and pushing. It's a fucking thing. Yeah. Like, it's a lot of work.
So we went to DC. We leveled up. We saw the Oprah exhibit. Oh my God. I also spent so much time in Julia Child's exhibit. Julia Child has.
She's amazing.
Her whole kitchen is there.
Yeah, yeah. They put the whole kitchen there. Yeah.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
I literally stood in the nook, like in the thing where you can kind of walk in for like an hour.
It's amazing.
Just looking at every single thing, like how simple her kitchen was, but like. Everything made perfect sense.
The best thing about her is how she always fucked up and she didn't give a fuck. And she continued.
My gosh. But her kitchen is that.
Yeah.
Like count different level counters. Like she just like made this kitchen over the years just to suit her height and her food. Like the way that she likes to make food.
That's so crazy.
You know, it was so beautiful to see that. Oh my gosh. So I went to New York and because I was part of this Latinx exhibit at La Bodega Gallery. That Christina Ferrigno curated. And that was cool because I got to see Francisco again. He was there. And then all these other people. And it was so beautiful being there. I just like showed up to New York. Me and Eva just show up straight from the airport to the art show. And there's this community of people that I love there.
That's awesome.
You know, like I never thought I would have that. But y'all, New York, my New York fam is the best. So shout out to everybody. I just like Tom. And then Thomas, my best friend Thomas showed up. And I was like two Budweiser's in. I was like, oh my God, I'm just crying. It was so good.
You're such a good accomplice.
Oh, it was great. I met so many amazing people and I interviewed so many people there also. So, you didn't rest? Oh, I rested. I just, interviewing people to me isn't work. It's fun to me.
Right.
So that was fun, but... Oh, that's okay. So that's when it hit me. So I was like, go, go, go. And then I went to New York and shout out to my friend Autumn Gomez. We hung out. Maybe I shouldn't say her last name. Oh, it doesn't matter. I already said it. So she lives in Queens in Ridgewood, which I love that neighborhood. And so I said, you know what? I'm just going to try to lay low and just stay in Ridgewood and just hang out. And Autumn has a spare bedroom because she's a baller like that in New York. And so we were hanging out. And, of course, I wanted to see people. So I started going to different places. But I mostly just hung out and rested. I didn't go to any, like, touristy stuff. I did go to the Brooklyn Museum to see the Frida exhibit. I was invited by Noé. Gaitan, who was there
in the live taping.
Yeah, who went to our live taping. So he extended the offer, and I took him up on it. So he gave me a tour of the Frida exhibit, and it was a beautiful museum. And
there's a really good article on it.
Yeah, it was.
Didn't they exhibit their fucking lipstick? Like it became about her image as opposed to like.
The show looked great. And then upstairs, there was a really great show about Stonewall. And I've never seen Judy Chicago's The Dinner Party in person before.
It's a thing.
It's more than a thing. It's epic. It's historic.
It's beautiful. Yeah, like it is amazing. Yeah.
I mean, it holds up. It's really cheesy and like, you know, it's from the 80s, right? Or something. So it's dated. But just seeing the detail in person.
And a whole building around it.
Of each woman that's represented in the dinner party.
Yeah.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, read a book. No.
Google it, loca.
Google it. The Dinner Party by Judy Chicago.
Yeah.
It's an iconic piece, and it's at the Brooklyn Museum, and it's this beautiful.
It is a must-see.
This beautiful feminist piece.
Yeah.
I love how much space it takes up. That's so badass.
Right. Yeah.
You know? So I went there. I did that in New York. And I think my favorite part of the whole trip was hanging out with my new friend, Oscar. Shout out to Oscar. And they took me to, oh, first of all, we crashed the Frida party because there was a, later in the week, there was another party at the Brooklyn Museum. Yeah. And we crashed that. We got drunk. It was great. The Chulita Vinyl Club was there. A bunch of people were there. And we ended up going to this bar in Brooklyn, and Lady Quesadilla was there, mm-hmm. and my favorite horchata was there.
Oh my God.
And they're like two of my absolute favorite drag queens.
Yeah.
And I walk into the back where they were, and they both point at me, and they're like, "You bitch." And they just, Lady Quesadilla was like, "Oh, I'm going to interview you for my show. Oh, I'm a big deal. You haven't called me, bitch." Like, it was so great. I'm just such a fan of them, and for them to know who I am was like wild.
Mind blowing, yeah.
Yeah. But I did see them at DragCon, so maybe that's where they remember me from. But that was such an amazing, fun night just to be around all those queers. And Lady Quesadilla always loves to start shit.
Right.
And there's at one point, this white girl got on stage, and Lady Quesadilla was angry. It was so good. It was so good. But she just makes sure everybody treats the queens like they should be treated, and they get tipped. And I just fucking love that.
Yeah, I saw a picture of you with like surrounded by drag queens. I'm like, ah, esta cabrona está bien contenta.
It was so fun. That's beautiful. Shout out to everybody. Okay, so then, so when I was in New York, that's when I like got to like be like horizontal and like lay down for a while and rest, and that's when like my back was like, no bitch. I never had that pain before. I know you have had back problems before,
like not being able to get
Latinos
up
who lunch in their 30s. So
almost 40, girl.
Oh,
me.
Yeah
You see it in the
I can see it. So yo, that shit is real.
It's fucked up, isn't it?
Like, I couldn't move.
Uh-huh.
Like, I like would move too quick at night and be like, oh, like, and it would wake me up. I don't want to feel that anymore.
No.
I just like rested and stretched. That actually helped me, just like resting and like staying in bed for more than, 6 hours or whatever.
That's so crazy.
And then I came back to Las Vegas for a minute to make my cousin's
yes.
I'm not even gonna have time.
I was gonna ask you.
This might have to be a double guada.
Fuck it, let's do it.
Okay.
Let's go.
I'll do it in the next guada.
Okay.
Because I had to make a piñata for my prima Alia, who has been on the show before. If you go back to the episode called The Youths, Alia.
Oh, it was her quinceañera, finally.
It was her quinceañera.
Oh, my God. We're getting old.
I know.
That's so crazy.
Okay, so me and Michaela, actually, my friend Michaela, friend of the pod, she helped me make the piñata for her. Enchanted forest themed. I'm not going to get into it.
No.
We'll wait for another, next episode.
Yeah.
And then I went straight to Houston to work. And knowing my limitations and what my body can take in a healthy way.
Right. You took it easy.
I took it easy. I only worked.
It's still a crazy show.
I only worked every day for 9 days. It was 10 days straight, but I only worked for 8 to 9 hours a day. That's it, like a normal person.
Yeah, that's what you did.
And then I went home. I didn't do any fuckery. I just went straight home and to the apartment they rented for me, and just like,
you have to
lay down and watch TV like a person. I did go out a couple nights. Shout out to Elliot. He came out from Austin to hang out.
Nice.
And a couple other folks. So yeah, I did a whole show. And shout out to the Houston Center for Contemporary Craft, because they really took care of me. They put me up in a really nice place. And I voiced my concerns about help. And they had...
Especially in such a short time.
They had volunteers there every day. So I would go in the morning, and I would at least have two volunteers.
Right.
And they worked for like 4 hours, then like mandatory lunch break, and then I'd come back and there was fresh volunteers every day.
Nice.
And so the volunteers there turned it the fuck out, and the staff there is amazing. And we made this show that, I mean, it looks like it took a long time to make. We did it in 10 days. And
that's insane.
You know, I always pull it together, but I love to see the night before the show opened. It looked like a fucking, like, tornado went through there. And I could see it on people's faces, like, what? This is going to be the art show? And I was like, you know how I felt like the fairy godmother from fucking Cinderella? I was like, bitty, 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 boo, boom, putting everything together. Everybody kept coming in and like, you're so fast. I was like, yeah, bitch, I'm making a giant pile of nachos. So if y'all that haven't seen my Instagram, the show's called...
All You Can Eat.
Yeah, Justin Favela, All You Can Eat. And it's
Is this your first solo show?
Bitch, what?
No, you've had a lot of installations here and there, but like a properly solo Justin Favela show.
I've had like 18. What are you talking about?
Okay, I'm just wondering because I was thinking about it because I thought about it in the Barrick Museum and I'm like, no, that's with Ramiro. That's not a solo show. So I was just thinking about it.
Yeah, girl.
Okay, good.
I've had a lot of solo shows.
That's good. That's good.
Hi, my name is Justin Favela. How are you? I've been doing a podcast with you for 3 years. This one is about Tex-Mex, and it is... I wanted to make giant Tex-Mex food just to be able to like talk about the history of Tex-Mex food.
Right.
And I used to hate Tex-Mex food when I was younger. And it was this hate because of like, that's not real Mexican food, you know, like this bullshit about authenticity.
Right.
And so I just wanted to blow up these ridiculous foods and really get into the history of them and tie them to, you know, the globalization of Latino culture through Mexican food, right?
Yeah.
And most of the globalization is through Tex-Mex.
Right.
So just having a bigger conversation around that and identity, I thought would be interesting.
That shit is so interesting because so many things we think they're Mexican. Like, people are like, oh, ceviche, this and that. Like, no, bitch. Like, have you had Peruvian ceviche? Like, ceviche. Like, when you start to contextualize some of those foods, like, it really tells you about this pan-Latin American thing. And it's not all just fucking Mexican.
Yeah, it's true. So I chose all foods that were allegedly... I'm just going to say that just in case I'm wrong. Invented in Texas or popularized in Texas or near the border. So chile con carne, you know, there's a big history with the chili queens in San Antonio.
Right.
And chile con carne is also the state dish in Texas.
That's
which
crazy.
Is so interesting. And chile con carne has this really amazing history. It was at the World's Fair and it like represented Texas back
damn,
in the day.
Damn, I didn't know that.
It has a tie to the Canary Islands through migration. Yeah. That's why they use a certain
type of meat.
Spices. There's and you know, the chili, like as we know it today, that like Americans eat, like with beans and
right.
It's derived from the chile con carne that the chili queens would make in San Antonio. So like chili and spaghetti that you're having in the Midwest is a direct tie to like this Tex-Mex Mexican history.
In Texas, because chili is its own thing in New Mexico, which is its own thing in Colorado, which is like when you think about it, like chile California is not the same thing as like dried chile from New Mexico, which is not the same thing that you're talking about. It's fucking complicated.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to the gringos, they all think it's the same shit.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And then I made nachos because
hello.
Nachos. Nobody eats that shit in Mexico. That's definitely a border food. And, you know, popularized in Texas also.
Right.
But I made these nachos supreme. So I put this, I made nachos before, but these I put extra ingredients. I did them with black beans.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to my mom. And then I did put jalapenos on them raw.
And piles of sour cream.
And sour cream.
Ejole.
Baby.
Nice.
So good. And cilantro on these ones.
Con cilantro?
Green onions and cilantro.
Wow, qué fancy.
So much flavor. So much flavor. I should have put onions, but next time. So I did nachos. I did the margarita machine, the frozen margarita machine, was invented at Mariano's in Dallas, Texas, back in the 1970s. I found that out when I was at the Smithsonian. They have the original machine there. And so...
That could be a whole entire episode, the history of the margaritas. There's a place in Juarez that claims they started it. Remember we went like...
I don't trust people from Juarez. They're lying. So it was invented in Dallas, Texas. And maybe the OG margarita, frozen one.
Right.
Yeah.
But then you go to Tijuana and there's a bar that they claim that. And then it's like a thing.
I believe that it's a border invention.
Right.
Only people from the border would
create something
dumb
like
enough.
That.
No, I'm just kidding. Margarita, I love like an old school, like a good margarita actually.
Like como un cóctel chiquito, no? Like a whole entire.
No, that's like made with actual like lemon limes.
Yeah.
Not tequila. This fucking sour mix. Ooh, what the hell? Yeah. Literally all you need is limes, tequila, and a sweetener like agave or whatever, you know? That's it.
And ice, yeah.
And ice, yeah.
Fuck.
So frozen, so there's I call it a frozen margarita moment, okay, in the show. There's no plates. Everything's just on the ground, which is I thought was funny. I made a puffy taco. Also an invention in San Antonio, I believe, and puffy taco.
Yeah.
I think it has a history with like Native Americans because it almost reminds me of, you know, the Navajo bread or the
Indian tacos.
That they have in New Mexico.
Right.
And
I was thinking about it. It's so fucked up when we think about all this Indian bread and stuff. Like, that's the shit that the Spanish, like, came in and fucked up, mm-hmm. like, Native diets. Because that shit wasn't here before.
No.
It's so crazy.
No. And then the fajitas. Mm-hmm. Fajitas were popularized or invented on some accounts at the original Ninfas on Navigation Road.
That's the name of the...
It's Ninfas. Uh-huh. But there's several of them, so I have to say the original Ninfas on Navigation.
In Houston?
In Houston, Texas.
Okay. Wow.
And so fajitas... our skirt steak, which I didn't think about the name fajitas.
Arrachera.
So fajitas, skirt, faja. I'm like, this is all making sense to me. I need a faja after eating all these fajitas.
So basically what you're saying is that all of our perceptions around the world, a lot of perceptions around the world about what Mexican food is was invented in Texas.
Yo, I literally thought fajitas were Mexican.
Yeah.
No. They were legit invented in Houston, Texas.
That's insane.
And so Doña Ninfa would make tacos al carbón all over wood fire. Mm-hmm. Carbón meaning like the carbón of
charcoal.
She would make charcoal from wood.
Right.
And make these amazing tacos al carbón. And then she started cutting them in a certain way, fajitas, with onions and peppers, with the side of whatever, and tortillas, handmade tortillas. Oh my God, the tortillas there were so fucking bomb. I made these giant flour tortillas out of tissue paper, like wrapped in aluminum foil.
Mira, son de papel, and I'm like,
I was so hungry working on that show. I made a roasted jalapeno. I made the fajitas, the onions, the peppers, all that shit. It was so good. And then I made a combo platter because I feel like the combo platter. You don't do that in Mexico.
I met once a white lady, and she's like, when I go to a Mexican restaurant, if they have combo platters, I walk away. That shit is not Mexican.
It's not, and it's a lie, and it's a way to get more money from you.
Yeah.
Just because they're adding rice and beans to
doesn't
it.
Mean they're going to charge five more
they
fucking
They put an
dollars.
Extra $5 on there. Girl, that cost them 30 cents, not even.
True.
You know what I mean?
That's true.
So... I made a combo platter with two crunchy tacos, which are also a bullshit invention. Two crunchy tacos.
Is that also Texas? The crunchy shell?
I mean, they do it in Texas, but really the crunchy shell could be attributed to Guy Bell, the inventor of Taco Bell, one of the mid-century's most important engineering feats in fast food history.
In American history.
Yeah. An American icon, the hard taco shell.
Oh, shit.
So... It was two taco shells, rice, beans, guacamole, sour cream, and an enchilada, a big old Texas enchilada with red sauce on it, and cheese.
Con arroz adentro.
And cheese. Yeah.
Damn.
No, I didn't put rice in it.
I want to see that.
I just put a lot of cheese. It's on my Instagram, bitch.
No, I've seen the pictures, but I want to see.
In person, it's even better. It's even better. Shout out. You know what? Shout out to all the people that went to the opening. And there was a few people that spent a lot of time looking at the work, and it gave me a lot of joy to see that because I'm all about, I love making people laugh and just seeing people like smile when they see my art. It's nice, you know, because yeah. a lot of these artists, especially, you know, no shade, but shade to a lot of Mimi artists that we've interviewed and on the show, you know, like their work is all about trauma, you know?
Yeah.
And so I like to make dumb shit because we should be allowed to make dumb shit.
Right. We and should this be allowed to laugh.
And of course, this show has different messages.
Yeah.
But it's dumb. Like you're walking around giant an enchilada that's 10 feet long. You know, like that's dumb. That's funny, you know? And so there was a couple people there, though, that I could tell took it seriously. And there's some people that just laughed.
Let me guess. They were white.
No. There were like Latinos people that were just looking at all the details, which was like so cool because I didn't expect that. Because usually when I make the bigger wall installations, those have so much detail that people, I think, get overwhelmed and don't really look at it too much, too long. Mm-hmm.
But I think also it throws people off because I think the expectation of going to museum is, one, to be educated and to come out of those spaces becoming a better person. So when you go inside a museum and you don't get that experience, it throws you off because the idea is that you're supposed to have a moment. And we talked about it in the podcast before. Yeah. We're like, what is the moment that you've had with art? And it's like, no, that's a fucking Victorian invention that you're supposed to have this like personal spiritual relationship with art that is not necessarily, I mean, it could be there. You could have a moment with art, but like that shit is made up. It doesn't mean that every time you go to a museum, you're going to cry and be moved and be a better person. Like, not necessarily.
Yeah.
So I can see that people being like, do I laugh? Do I contemplate? Do I go through a fucking sublime moment? Like, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah. And it was also really sweet. I love the people that went to the opening because I feel like the Houston Center for Contemporary Craft really tries to cast a wide net. And what I mean by that, it wasn't just art people there.
Right.
There was people there that I could tell just like wanted to experience.
Like it
I
should think, be, man.
I think just because it's a craft center, it's not a museum. Like it's not a contemporary art museum. It draws more, to me, more interesting people than like the same like art ladies with like chunky necklaces and
ladies who lunch
and messy, you know, man bun dudes, you know,
and crazy eyeglasses. No, but this is also true about the hierarchies of art. I'm always annoyed by popular art, by craft art. But the reality is that those institutions, because by the quote unquote higher art institutions like fine art museums and shit, they've seen as lower. Yeah. There's a greater connection with the community, and it shouldn't fucking be like that.
Yeah.
So, like, I feel like fine art museums should learn from those spaces because they reach the community in ways that those fine art museums can never because they put shit that it just pushes you away from the space.
I mean, and they still have a lot of work to do. It's not a perfect institution,
of course.
And shout out to Catherine Hall. She's an amazing curator. We were talking about that, you know. She's still working on making it more accessible. And, you know, shout out. It was also such a relief, and I told her this to her face, which, whatever, I don't give a fuck anymore. Mm-hmm. I was just like, thank you for being, like, a nice white lady that gets it, because I'm just so triggered now.
Yeah.
Like, when I see a white lady museum professional, I was like, oh, my God, is this bitch going to be...
Almost like you know what to expect.
Like, yeah, I'm like, oh, is she going to be, like, low-key racist? Because a lot of these people have the facade of being, like, a woke, knowledgeable, whatever, you know, person, professional, and then they start talking and you're like, oh, no.
Oh, but that's right. They work for an oppressive institution.
Yeah. Well, Catherine gets it. That was an immediate sense of relief. You know what I mean? So it's not that hard. Like,
but it's also...
Just a note for like white people that don't want to offend people. It's not that hard.
Just open. I mean,
you got Google. If you have any embarrassing questions, you don't have to ask me.
Right.
You can Google it.
Right.
It's wonderful. The internet is a great tool. Thank you, Al Gore.
There's a lot of YouTube videos about that shit.
Yeah.
It's also the word museum. Like, it scares la raza, man, and for good reason. I mean, it's not really a reflection about our communities not being educated. It's about a reflection of these institutions pushing us away for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And it's I know a lot of institutions are really trying, and a lot of institutions are succeeding, and a lot of institutions are failing. So I think it's gonna be a while to like Latinx communities in this country feel fully comfortable to be part.
Yeah.
The Mexican Art Museum in Pilsen does a really good job. Unfortunately, the only time they attract masses of people is like Dia de los Muertos and shit like that. You know what I mean?
Yo, I'm going to make a public service announcement right now.
Go for it.
I am taking a break from doing anything Dia de los Muertos related for a minimum
of
5 years.
Yes.
So don't even talk to me.
In November. Yeah,
don't even talk to me about Dia de los Muertos.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. I feel like we should keep doing Guaraguara shit, right?
Let's do it.
Should we carry it on to the next episode?
Sure.
Okay, so next week we're going to come back. We're going to talk about my cousin's quince.
Yes.
And then the future of Latinos Who Lunch, because I, you know, almost killing myself. And Babelito has suggested this before, yeah. So I'm going to give you credit where credit is due. You're like, why don't we take a break like other podcasts? And I'm like, what, bitch? You're such a weak-ass motherfucker. What do you need a break for? But now I need it. And I just need it for my own mental health, really. I just need to, you know, just reevaluate my life choices.
Yeah.
And so we're going to take a break in the future. So be prepared for that. I don't want to fucking hear it on social media.
Ah, ya los oigo. Ya los oigo.
I'm going to take at least 3 months off, y'all. So, yeah. And it's coming. And it's also, I want to give a big shout out right now. Maybe this is my recommendation, and mm-hmm. you can do a recommendation mm-hmm. too to wrap this up. But shout out to Grizzly Kiki. We had, first of all, I had to see them when I was in New York. And I took them to Panda Express last time I went, because right. they had never gone. Or I think Daniel had never gone. And I'm like, what kind of Latino has never been to fucking Panda Express? Like, there's the major chain restaurants that we all go to.
Right.
Olive Garden and Panda Express.
It's a must.
That is our fucking shit, okay?
My nephew calls it Panda Pollito Chicken. See?
El Panda, that's what my family calls it. And so they took me to sushi. And me, Francisco, Eva, and Robert and Daniel went to sushi. I think we went to Connecticut. I don't know how far. We drove a long way. No, it was in Queens somewhere. But it was so amazing.
Of course.
So it was the best. It was actually, I think that was the best part of the trip. It was just so fun hanging out with them. They're so great. And I really look up to them and their podcast, because they've been doing this for a long time and their interviews are so amazing. And they were doing recaps of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah.
And y'all, this last season sucked, you know? It wasn't great. And they were just tired of doing negative reviews of the season. So halfway through the season, they just said, fuck it.
They took a break.
We're not doing it anymore. We're going to do shows that we want.
Right.
So they just stopped doing recaps, which is what they're known for.
Yeah.
And they just started talking about whatever the fuck they wanted.
That's beautiful.
And that was for their own mental health.
Right.
Because they were just tired of being part of this conversation that is also really tired.
Yeah, when it becomes a homework that you don't enjoy, like, why even do
why?
It? Yeah.
Why do it? Yeah. Yes, exactly. That's why I need a break from this show. So I took a note from them, and the season's not over. I need my root. I need that. They're like my number one recap
go
show.
To, yeah.
I'm like, oh, there's 20 others that I could listen to. It's not the end of the world. Mm-hmm. And now I have more interesting content to listen to, because I could tell they're into what they're talking about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's good.
So shout out to Grizzly Kiki. And I mean, you just heard them last week. Because we aired an episode with them. But shout out to them again, because that's really what was inspiring to me, just to see how, you know, they're taking care of themselves, and that's really great. Yeah, do you have any recommendations, Babelito?
Yeah, it's not necessarily related to the conversation, but you guys know that I got my apodo from an album by Santa Sabina. And this is a band from the 90s. And actually, just last week in the Hola Mexico Film Festival, the documentary called Rita el Documental was premiered. And actually, there's a really good article on Remezcla called This Documentary Spotlights Santa Sabina, Rita Guerrero, an Overlooked Mexican Rock Icon. If you have access to see it, I've been following the development of the documentary because they've been, like, maybe for 5 years, they were recaudando dinero so they can do it. And they finally put it together, and it's going to different film festivals. So if you are in a major city and you can see it, please go see it. Rita Guerrero is a huge inspiration for me since I was a teenager. It was the first time that I listened to a Mexican band just do jazz, just do all kinds of different shit that wasn't necessarily what people expected from a Mexican rock and español band. She also, like, sang opera at some point. I mean, she was amazing, amazing. And, like, for all our brujas over there, if Rita Guerrero is not in your radar, like, this is the time. It's the lyrics of, for example, my favorite album, Babel, they're all about that. They're all about spirituality, but via this, like, weird, odd combination of, like, Bible shit and vampires, and it's just super, 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 super amazing. Incredible music. To this day, the album Babel, it's still my favorite album of all time. If you haven't listened to it, Google it. It's amazing. So again, the documentary is called Rita, because her name is Rita Guerrero. She died of cancer a while ago. El Documental, if you have access to it, and if I can find a link to watch it later on, make sure that I will recommend it here. And please, please make sure that you have some of Sabina in your radar, because now everybody's about the 90s. But when all this 90s revival started coming back, I really thought the rock en español was going to do a comeback, and it didn't. Nobody gives a fuck about rock en español. And it's a thing, and it really informed a lot of my youth and informed a lot of the things and a lot of my identity. So make sure to check that out. And that's it.
Awesome. Okay, so I think I mentioned earlier in the episode we're going to do the white passing episode next. That was a lie. I'm a liar, y'all. I'm sorry. I can't help it. It's in my blood. So so we're going to do another Wada Wada right now. So that'll air this next upcoming week. And then we'll air the white passing episode.
Sounds good.
From Fusebox Festival. And so I think I'll have to, like, kind of narrate it because the audio is a little wonky, and we when people were asking questions. Anyway, y'all don't need to know that. And as always, you can follow us at Latinos Who Lunch on all social media platforms. Visit latinoswholunch.com for more episodes. And if you want to rate us, that would be amazing. Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts, 5 stars.
5 stars only.
Because the more reviews we have, the more visible we are, and
visibility leads to representation, and representation matters, people.
Today's episode was produced by Justin Favela and Emmanuel Ortega. The music you're hearing in the background right now is by the band Brownout. I'm Favi Fav.
I'm Babelito.
Bye.
Ciao.